Almighty and merciful God, from whom comes all counsel, wisdom, and understanding, we humbly ask you to guide and assist us in our deliberations and in our work. May all our efforts be directed to the welfare and good of our community and our country. May we act honorably in pursuit of true justice for all our people, now and for the future, and for generations still to come. Amen. Meeting of Parliament, Friday, 18th November 2016. Order of proceedings. Confirmation of minutes. The minutes of the last meeting of Parliament, which was held on the 20th, 21st, 26th, 27th, 28th of October, and the 8th of November 2016. May I find the minutes of correct? Communication from the Chair. Petitions. Announcements. Papers to be laid. The Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to lay on the table this report of the principal audit on the accounts of the Devoid to Culture and Heritage Agency for the financial year ending March the 31st, 2012.
Order tonight. Report of committee, answers to all questions. We commence with question number 771. And the questioner is the Honourable E.J. Hedges.
Mr. Speaker, sir, can the Minister for Housing indicate by when the pending repairs or replacement of letterboxes at the Office of State will be undertaken?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, the letterboxes that have been procured have a leading period of 9 weeks. Once received, the installation is estimated to take 4 weeks to complete.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister said there was a leading period of 9 weeks. Are you talking about he's expecting the talks over 9 weeks from now, or let's just set them out for their interpretation?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Question number 772, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Can the Minister for Housing provide details of how many tenants required urgent defunding from their homes since the answer to question number 601 of 2015, indicating the reason why, the date when said defunding became necessary, and the date when the tenants were able to return to their homes?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, no tenants have required urgent defunding from their homes since the end of the process.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't know if you would allow me as a sort of possible leader. In the past, the Minister has given me information on those that required return and so on. In most cases, by the time he gives me the answer, the majority of them have been sent home. But would you happen by chance to be aware, are there any still tenants outstanding, for example, like from those of the last couple of months, that for some sort of delay in the repair work have not been able yet to return to the home? Is this your way?
Mr. Speaker, I'm not aware, but I recall from the question last month, but they were only a couple and have not returned in a year. After my question last month, of those I don't know who have now returned in here.
Question number 773, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Can the Minister for Housing say how much expenditure has been incurred in respect of legal costs relating to the evictions forces of government rental homes since the answer to question number 602 of 2016, providing a breakdown showing the number of homes involved and to whom payments were made?
Also, the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, there has been none.
Question number 774, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Further to the exchange of information during question number 603 of 2016, can the Minister for Housing please now provide a revised answer with updated details in respect of all pending repairs, that is, similar fully completed jobs to rental homes, indicating the date when these reports were first made by tenants and stating how many would be repaired by A, the Housing Works Agency, B, subcontractors, and C, the assigned tenants themselves?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, to date there are 241 pending repairs to rental homes. The dates in which these were reported are as follows. There were 20 in May, 28 in June, who the remaining figures, Mr. Speaker, since the last meeting. 20 in June, 25 in August, 19 in September, 57 in October, 72 in November. 38 of these will be repaired by the Housing Works Agency, and 203 will be repaired by subcontractors. Three are on a self-repair basis.
Mr. Speaker, can I then ask you that from the information given me, it follows that there are no jobs pending to be completed which were reported prior to the 20th of May of this year, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, that's the information that's been provided to me by the department. When we were here last month, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman told me that he'd spoken to someone that he thought the works were outstanding for a period for longer than that, and I did invite the Honourable Gentleman, if he did have details, to let me know. I have not had any of these details, but because of this, in any event, Mr. Speaker, I have asked the department to undertake a sweep just to make sure that nothing has fallen through the cracks, because sometimes there may be human error or something. So, if this in case there's anything pending that may have been forgotten or may be hanging on a computer or something,
please undo any of them, but certainly this is the information that has been provided today. Yes, indeed, I did say to the Minister that I could collate some information in confidential. However, the notice for questions came too soon, and we haven't had an opportunity to read that. If another Minister, I pose a question because it will give her a chance to go back and discuss, obviously, with the staff from Housing Works Agency and update the information. I do have at least 10 and a couple more on each certification, but I do have information that shows that some repair works are pending now for a period of around 2 years in one particular case. Some of you claiming it was reported 4 years ago and so on. Would the Minister think it's best that perhaps if we agreed on a meeting date and we met rather than end up in long-winded correspondence and myself a decade? I'm interested in solving the problem for the tenants more than anything. I'm sure the Minister would like to join me in that exercise. So if he agrees to that and confirms it by you, we can then, when we have a suitable break, look at our diaries and try and intervene and break as soon as possible.
Mr. Speaker, I think I made it very clear last night that there is information which may have fallen to the top, but I was, of course, very happy to receive it. So, of course, what I said last night, if the Honourable Gentleman has, and I see the person, what is there if you were to give them to me, they should only have a day, so it's certainly send them up to housing immediately for them to be investigated. And I also found the question to be there, and I do confirm it here before yourself, whether I have this invitation open in any event, Mr. Speaker, as I said last month, and I've always said before, Mr. Speaker, about helping people. Is it something that may that the system may have missed? Then, of course, as the person with the responsibility, I'd like to know about it. So, if the Honourable Gentleman has this information, I'd be very grateful to receive it. Thank you.
Question number 775, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Can the Minister for Housing provide details of all expenditure incurred since the answer to question number 604 of 2016 in respect of contracts awarded for making empty homes suitable for rehabilitation, stating to whom payments were made, how much has been paid, the number of residential homes pertaining to each payment, as well as indicating the type, nature of repair work or cleaning services undertaken?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, one contract has been awarded. This has been to 8th Salmon for £10,380 for one property. And the work carried out by this company is general refurbishment. Work has included plastering walls and ceilings, painting, replacing floor tiles, doors, plumbing, electrical.
Question number 776, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Can the Minister for Housing provide details of how many rental homes have been allocated and or assigned by government, inclusive of room composition of said homes, from the stock returned or earmarked to be returned by the new tenants who have moved or will be moving into a newly built senior citizens rental home?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, the elderly citizen flats have not yet been handed over to him, which means that these occupant flats have not been vacated and affect their flats can't be returned to the housing stock for allocation to new tenants.
I can understand that Mr. Speaker, this is probably an ongoing exercise. Would you, to avoid me posing the question next month, it's been already. Will the lady please give an indication by when this sort of exercise will be complete, and I can then find the with your permission to speak, find the question to be repeated at that stage.
In terms of Parliament question, Mr. Speaker, I think that it would be safe to say that for an accurate answer, not before the January session.
Question number 777, the Honourable D.A. Simpson. Mr. Speaker, how many complaints have been received by purchasers of new affordable homes from government in relation to defects in those homes or the estate in which those homes are located, listing the defects complained of? Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, any defects arising from the sale of the new affordable homes are tackled as part of the standing process in the sale of the completed. These are not considered complaints or comments. Most defects or smells have now been rectified, and only a few remain to be rectified, mainly in the case of the more recent completions.
Mr. Speaker, does he have a list of defects? That is the question.
Well, Mr. Speaker, my answer to the question was that they are not defects, they are smiles. So, in relation to the concerns of smiles, there have been some concerns that have been raised. There have been things like security issues raised because of the barriers of deep utilities, these have been replaced. There have been concerns and smells in relation to the communal water pump, and this is something that we have referred to those who install the water pump for maintenance. We have had reports in relation to the list. We have been looked at. We have had advice in relation to the list, but this is on account of the speed and the setting to sort of the power setting to which they were set during the time that people were moving in, given the volume of traffic that we would have had on the list, and because people, unfortunately, some people were inappropriately leaving the list, but that's something that's not really relevant now because the bulk of the people have moved in. But Mr. Speaker, those are generally the concerns that have been brought to our attention. I met with the committee of the territories to today, the Chief Minister, where we looked at the concerns that they had raised. So anything that may be pending is, of course, going to be tackled with the team. And I will be meeting with the territory committee of the Montgomery State Council.
So, Mr. Speaker, apart from the snags, the few causes that she has listed, there are no other issues that have been notified to the Minister or by DRP in relation to this estate?
Not beyond the general snag, Mr. Speaker. I've outlined some of the issues in relation to Beachview. The lead said so far had complaints from Montgomery News, which is the noisy community. Communal mechanical structures, and these are currently being addressed by the contractor. What we have, Mr. Speaker, at the moment is the general teething problem that one would very reasonably expect in an estate which has been completed and given the size of the estate. As soon as these are reported, Mr. Speaker, through DRP, we are looking at the appropriate remedial action and most of the associated to the contractor.
Mr. Speaker, is it the case that a lift in one of these blocks fell 2 floors down from where it was positioned?
Mr. Speaker, there was a case on Facebook insofar as the lift, and of course, I asked for this to be investigated. Mr. Speaker, there is CCTV inside the lift from the estate and having checked it. What happened, Mr. Speaker, was there? Trigger in the lift was set, which means that the lift, when the trigger is set, will take the lift when a person goes to the ground floor. It's not a lift for the lift itself. It's part of the general mechanics of the lift and it's standard safety procedures. That is what happened. And having checked the CCTV, they're satisfied that what happened was what should happen in the general course of things. And of course, Mr. Speaker, we have checked this and verified it with the fire brigade. And there's been reports of such because, of course, to one of the gentlemen's stories on Facebook, which is where it was. It was brought to my attention and I wanted to check this. In fact, because people had raised issues about the list, I rolled in the list myself quite a number of times, Mr. Speaker, just to check this.
The Honourable Lady said that she was currently discussing with the Management Committee or a committee of tenants certain issues that have arisen. What are those issues that she is now discussing with those tenants?
Well, Mr. Speaker, they are in fact the issues that I just read out. These are issues which are generally latent defects from the construction, which the territory committee wanted to discuss to the government and have it, and give our assurance that we would deal with these appropriately with the contractor. And of course, Mr. Speaker, if government has dealt with the defects that unfortunately the tenants at Milton View, Daisy and Cumberland inherited, and that's something that we inherited as a government because those defects were not dealt with by the administration at the time, and it's something that we committed to remedy, and of course, we want to remedy in relation to defects which may arise from recent section projects, and we report, of course, to the major services.
And Mr. Speaker, the reason why I asked that particular question was because the Honourable Lady in her answer, she divided her answer into two. In two stages. She said
there are defects to Islam which can cause it that have already been dealt with, and there are defects that have been left over that are now being discussed with the management or the committee that's been opened. And it's related to those ones that I'm asking. Can she give more details in relation to which ones? Because, of course, she has in her answer mentioned a number of issues. She then said they've been dealt with, and then she then mentioned later on that there's been these conversations and ongoing dialogue with this committee of tenants in order to deal with outstanding issues. I just want to know what are the outstanding issues, because the Honourable Lady saying, well, I've already referred to, yes, you have referred to, but there are two types. One, the government have already dealt with, and I'm interested in the ones that are still outstanding.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gander and the whole House will be very happy to hear that we are dealing with really very, 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 very minor issues. So, the Honourable and I attended the magnificent development of Kingston Charity, which is now the happy home of so many hundreds of Gibraltarian couples and homeowners, and we found that there is, in fact, very little of any concern. What we are dealing with are, for example, a fascia that may have not been screwed down properly. This is something that was added after snagging, that needs a little bit of tightening. Some of the external doors, because of people having, as we all know, Gibraltarians do, done so much work when they moved in, some doors to the rubbish area have been damaged. Those are the sorts of things that we're looking at. In the one particular corridor, there was a lot of wind because it was a windy area, and water may flow in when it rains with the wind. So we're looking at whether it is possible to create some short walls by the doors so that water doesn't flow into homes. Mr. Speaker, very, very minor issues that are being dealt with that the government is very happy to deal with. The sorts of things that any developer would be delighted to be dealing with after a new project has been completed. And having been involved in my professional career with private development, Mr. Speaker, very, very minor issues to deal with compared even to some of the top residential estates developed in Gibraltar for much more expensive accommodation. So, working with the caretaker committee, I think that we've made huge progress already in the work that DRP has done in dealing with the snagging issue, huge progress already in dealing with the minor defects that are left, and the Minister and I were delighted to attend to be able to see for ourselves what the remaining minor issues were, and I'm happy to tell the House that I've committed myself there, having received such a warm and enthusiastic welcome on my arrival at the estate, and the happy purpose to return before Christmas to see whether these minor issues that remained outstanding have been dealt with. So the House will no doubt be very happy to see that the investment made by these Gibraltarians in their new homes is one that is not subject to any major problems whatsoever, and the government is committed to dealing with the minor issues that remain.
So can I take it from the answer the Honourable Gentleman has given that the issues will be dealt with by the end of the year, or that he envisages any further time for the dealing of these issues?
Well, Mr. Speaker, there are some issues that will not be dealt with by the end of the year because, for example, one of them is the movement of a barrier, a vehicle barrier, where the tenants want to talk to DRP about the possibility of placing it somewhere else to provide a different sort of security. We tried two types of barriers. One of them doesn't have a civil system underneath. One does. They appear to prefer the civil system. One of the barriers that goes out onto Eastern Beach Road may be moved because it may be a better traffic management issue for the estate. We are happy to look at that. That, for example, will not be dealt with by the end of the year. It will require a design, and it will require procurement. If the tenants decide that they want to go down that route, other issues will very likely be dealt with long before the end of the year if they're minor and the materials necessary
available. Otherwise, they will be dealt with very, very quickly after the new year. And again, as I say to the Honourable Gentleman, I will continue to visit the estate and to ensure that everything has been dealt with and to continue to receive the enthusiastic and warm welcome that I receive when I visit the estate. And not just the ones developed by my administration, also the ones developed by former administrations, where I sorted out the problems and I received just as enthusiastic a welcome.
I'm glad to hear that you've been here with some of the ministers I've been able to attend on site, and I went to the gym. Can I have a minister maybe who was aware of the northern Mexico to his people coach on the actual landing on his floor, so it may have missed the snagging list of individual tenants and individual churches that came in, if the communal area along the corridors. If one looks up to the roof, the sort of covering that has been made in concrete is very much easier that for my unprofessional opinion, but I say that it's starting to become rusty. It coincides with what the females were trying to say that the committee has expended it. There's some water that comes into the side, that's going to be tackled. But once there's a piece of material that is rust, one knows that it's feeling that that's just continuing. And you know, you can nip it in the back, perhaps the females are going to commit themselves to doing the look over on yourself and just ensure that they. It seems to be like sort of corrugated type of feet, so we can tackle that one and avoid future problems for purchases.
I'm grateful for the able gentleman's unprofessional opinion. Mr. Speaker, the issue that was pointed out to us at the time that we were there, we were with the contractor with JBS who demonstrated that it's not rust, it's actually dead and it comes off, and the mechanism for dealing with it was explained to members of the committee. If in some areas it has progressed to that, then I have no reason to believe that it has. It will, of course, be dealt with, but it will be covered by the warranty of the material used. And a lot of what we're talking about is going back to the warranty for those who provided the material, and they will be the ones replacing any of those seats or doors that may have such a grant. If they are in fact suffering less. But there were very few instances of that. I mean, the huge estate as that is, I saw two or three doors which were suffering less because of the weathering in the area lower down on the beach, closer to the third group of spray, and which had been damaged, and therefore the paint had been damaged as a result of people doing their own DIY, etc. That we've been able to get in and create an element of rust, but it's within warranty and it will be dealt with on a warranty basis. So those are the issues that have given the sorts of issues this house has in the past heard referred to in respect of serious defects in other estates. I think the whole house will be very happy indeed that we're dealing with very, very minor issues here, and we want to congratulate. I won't say the government, because the House never wants to congratulate the government unanimously. It makes sure we want to do so in a division of 10-7, or at least 10-6. But we want to congratulate the contractor for the excellent work that they've done in this estate, and we want to wish well to all the purchasers who are enjoying the benefits of these affordable homes, especially as they will build their families and homes that they will enjoy and hope for many years.
Question number 778, the Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassan-Nine.
Is there a time scale for completion of installation of lifts in government estates?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, this goes hand in hand with the refurbishment programme. The programme is currently being revised and will factor the infrastructure work required for the lift installation.
Question number 779. Mr. Speaker, this is a question that was asked at the beginning of, certainly I think it was March or April, not March or April because we had the referendum, but it was either before March or after the referendum. And the answer that came back at the time was that the government, there were various phases in relation to the development, especially in the North Castle, Laguna, and also Lapis Estate. the first phase for completion was September. Now, that hasn't still been completed, and can the government now give a different completion date, bearing in mind that obviously the answer that was given prior to the summer has proved to be inaccurate, or at the very least, the government has obviously not been able to keep to that.
You can see that the completion of the estate was to be phased, and I have provided dates in Parliament in the past. However, you can see that completion of the phases is what we do is we look at the completion of the estate in percentage terms. And in this phase, Mr. Speaker, the majority of the refurbishment is complete. And while they are. Mr. Speaker, in any event, the date that I have provided in the past needs to be revised. I don't know what the revised dates for some of them are. Not all need to be revised, Mr. Speaker, just some of them. And I don't know what those dates are. Until I'm in Parliament, otherwise, I'm waiting for the outcome of the revision.
Speaker, could we just advise whether the government is looking at whether there's been any breach of contract in the supply of the list of installation of this?
Mr. Speaker, no, because it's not relevant.
Mr. Speaker, the line is obviously below in the installation of this. How can breach of contract not be relevant?
It's a very simple reason, because it's not about the supply of the list.
I'm grateful for the Chief intervention. Perhaps just for my information, perhaps for the general public, who is responsible for the installation of the list?
Mr. Speaker, I don't think that's a question that arises from this original question, but if we go back to where we were in respect to the question of the Honourable the Leader of the Different Researches, if we go back and look at Hansard, we understand then, at reading the Hansard, why it was that the rare road, and it relates to the installation of the three phase supply within an article of the Department of Fiscal Authority.
Question number 779, the Honourable Lee M.D. Hassan Ong.
What policy is in place with regards to taking care of individuals and families when there is a fire in a government-rented accommodation?
The Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, when individuals and families are required to be disconnected from their homes, alternative accommodation in the form of hotel or a self-taking apartment is obtained. If hotel accommodation is provided, then the family is given £10 per person for their food allowance, which they can claim by providing the relevant assistance. Mr. Speaker, I was wondering whether it would be more cost efficient for the taxpayer to have a stock of designated flats or a couple of flats saved up for emergencies. Because I can imagine that housing the victims in hotels must be quite an expense, and this is a question I wanted to ask or suggest. Mr. Speaker, the answer to whether it makes more financial sense is no, because of first and foremost, because of the demand on housing stock. And because we, of course, can't predict when we have a need for decanting. Decanting isn't something, or urgent decanting isn't something that we experience often. And it's not something that we can predict, because when we require urgent decanting, it will be, unfortunately, on account of of something that happens just between whether it's a fire, whether it's a flooding, and it's just an emergency situation. Usually, those situations are remedied quite quickly in order to accommodate the family. They can be accommodated in two ways, depending on the damage, whether we can repair the damage quickly enough for them to return to the original tenancy, or it may be that we can accommodate them elsewhere. But we're always looking at the most cost-effective way of providing it, and the period during which they stay in accommodation is relatively short. So this is the most cost-effective way of providing it in terms of the bigger picture, because it wouldn't be practical or practically really to have empty flats just there lying empty, lying dormant, in just waiting for cases such as these, and it may be that these cases don't happen.
Question number 718. Thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, can the Minister outline what is government policy in this area? If there is a fire, for example, or if there is a flood, but the fault lies with the tenant, does the government still be kind, even in those circumstances? And then the next question, I'll ask it now rather than stand up with your leave, Mr. Speaker, if I can ask you another supplementary. Does the policy apply, for example, to a situation where somebody is a co-owner in one of the co-ownership estates? Because it strikes me that you could have a situation where somebody that's a co-owner in a co-ownership estate may, in tragic circumstances, have a fire in their flat. They're not decanted. And somebody in a government estate that may be at fault for the fire, for example, is decanted. I'm just trying to explore with the Honourable Lady what the policy is in relation to government estates and also compared to co-ownership estates.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I'll take the last question first in relation to someone in a co-ownership estate, because when someone is an owner in a co-ownership estate, of course, the government is holding the co-ownership part in trust. So those people are private tenants of their property. So that's not something that the government would step in. The government has no duty to step in and decline in those cases. Now, the government's policy in relation, the government has a duty to the tenant in government estates, in governmental estates. Decanting is one thing, and then the expenditure as a result of the decanting is a different thing. And it may be that in some cases people need to subsequently reimburse any expenses as a result of the decanting, but that is subject to evidence and police investigations, etc.
Question number 780, the Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassan.
How many times has the Health and Safety Advisory Council met since its inception this year?
I'm for the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, the Health and Safety Advisory Council has not met since its inception this year. Mr. Speaker, I do understand that the Health and Safety Advisory Council has been in inception since May, and if it hasn't met, then how seriously has the government taken this council in the last 7 months has it met?
Speaker,
because perhaps I'm an assistant of a lady and it has been minister for health and safety before the allocation of responsibility. The honourable lady may recall that the government introduced an entirely new policy document that had been worked out, particularly within that union, which had been driving the agenda in respect of health and safety in the workplace. There had been consultation, of course, with other stakeholders. And there was the original health and safety advisory meeting where the different stakeholders to that advisory council met, and who are all able to set out their own particular concerns in respect of health and safety. For many, the advisory council agreed that they would nominate certain additional people whom they thought may be important to add to the work and the deliberations of that committee. And again, from memory, if I recall correctly, I also asked a chair of that meeting for the participants to set out in writing and to distribute by email the different objectives in addition to the ones that have been identified by the government. In addition to the advisory council meeting, I did meet them separately with some of the stakeholders that were the advisory council for them to provide me with some additional names. The honourable lady has a draft policy, additional policy, that deals with how management can best address health and safety issues in the workplace. So I think that the next stage would be for the honourable lady to be able to be briefed as to the different names that the stakeholders had proposed to be included in the advisory council, to see what participation that has been from existing members to what objectives should be met by the advisory council, and then at that point to be able to progress to the second meeting. I hope that was a decision to the honourable lady.
Thank you for the information. So based on the information that I've been given from the government, which one of the members envisaged when and how long more or less they expect to have another meeting? The people haven't taken over this responsibility just recently. Now, of course, I'm at a stage where I, having had benefit of the information, I really intend to call a meeting of the council very quickly to make sure that it's something that continues to be done.
Question number 781, the Honourable Ms. MD Hassan Nawan.
Can the government provide statistics of how many people have been admitted to Bruce's farm since January 2012?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 783.
Question number 783, the Honourable Ms. MD Hassan Nawan.
How many addicts have started their drug detoxification? I beg your pardon. Is the government aware of how many people who have undertaken the rehabilitation program since January 2012 at Bruce's Farm have relapsed into their addiction?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, 206 people have been admitted to Bruce's Farm since January 2012. Of these, 73 have relapsed.
We now move back to question number 782, the Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassan.
How many addicts have started their drug detoxification program at Bruce's Farm as opposed to the first stop at Ocean View?
Answer the Honourable the Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, 3 people. Mr. Speaker, may I ask the reason why, despite the policy, which I remember we discussed in fact last month, of the first stop moving to the Ocean View, why these 3 cases would have started instead at our business center? Because, Mr. Speaker, what we were discussing last time was having Bruce Samuel substitute Charles Moody. And the not mutually exclusive, but we cannot have Mr. Speaker, is someone going through clinical withdrawal, I think this is fine, where we don't have the clinical sort of staff to ensure that we do so in a safe environment. If these people have undertaken detox in this fund because they're not being deemed to be able to exercise in this fund safely. When we look at addiction, there's a wide range of addiction and there's also a wide range of level of substance abuse. Some substance abuse is complicated, some substance abuse is, can be polysubstance abuse because some people can take tranquilizers mixed with alcohol. Other people can be addicted to cocaine, to cannabis. Some detoxification requires a long period of supervision and some may require 2 weeks detoxification process that is reviewed. And some may require just a day or 2 days of detoxification where literally because of the nature of the addiction and the substance that is being used, what they require is maybe a day or 2 to 3 to go under supervision. It all depends on the nature of the drug or the substance that is being taken. Thank you for that information. Who is the team or the body of doctors who takes this decision as to where the patient goes? I mean, I understand that the bulk do start in those reviews, but who takes the decision for those who don't? The bulk does not necessarily have to start a those reviews, and it's correctly on the list. But again, depending on the substance and depending on the level, there will always be a medical professional involved, but it will depend on the circumstances. And it will also depend on whether the person is known to do this or not. Because people relapse, but a relapse isn't necessarily a bad thing, because some people relapse and are readmitted. A relapse isn't a failure. A relapse is a normal, sometimes, unfortunately, it's not a addiction isn't an exact science and not a rehabilitation. It will depend on the person, it will depend on the circumstances, and sometimes people need to go to rehabilitation facility 3 or 4 times before it is successful. But some people may say, for example, be free from addiction for a while, may relapse, and because they are already known to do this one, and their personality is known, and their drug of choice is known. In some circumstances, it may be deemed to be safe to admit them following an assessment by the group of some team in conjunction with the group. In other circumstances, we may require the group of psychologists to assess the person and assess them. But there will always be medical professionals involved. But it depends on the person, which is, of course, a present sensitive system. Thank you. The only confusion I have here is that the minister corrected me when I said that the bulk of her previous discussions start at OCDs, and one of the ladies says that is not necessarily the case, but I don't understand how it's not when we talk about, here I've been told in 2012, 206 have ended up in Bruce's farm. If they're talking about 2 or 3 people that the lady has mentioned starting at Bruce's farm, is it not the case that the bulk do start at OCDs? Only, Mr. Speaker, if they require detoxification. Because not everybody who requires rehabilitation therapy will require detoxification. Some people actually who enter the system. Yes, a lot of people do go to OCDs because they need to go to OCDs because of the detoxification. But it will depend on the person and if it's a guy from year to year. But some people admit call to be admitted to this refundable them, and they may be people who have been undergoing the program for a while and they feel that they are going to relapse and therefore ask for admission. So they haven't actually been needing. And not all drugs require detoxification. It all depends on the nature of the drug, it depends on the nature of the person, it depends on the level and the extent of the person.
We now move to questions to the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport, and we start.
Minister, can the Minister for Sport provide, sorry, say the name of the Minister, following on from the answer provided to question number 617 of 2016, can the Minister for Sport inform the House if the three vacancies within the Board of Sport and Leisure Authority have now been filled?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, the vacancy for Assistant Sports Development and Training Officer has been filled with a successful candidate starting employment with the GSLA on the 1st of December 2016. The closing date for the other two internal vacancies, namely the Centre Manager Grade 5 and Assistant Administration Manager Grade 4, have now elapsed. Candidates will be interviewed in the very near future.
I was just going to speak about the Minister from 35, where my head is. Last month I was told that there were three vacancies and that interviews were taking place as we spoke. I'm now informed that two appointments have been made with the successful applicants taking post until December, and it seems to be another two internal, two and two is four. So perhaps Mr. Speaker, the Minister can explain where I've mistakenly understood this figure.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, it's one and two. The vacancies have been filled up is the Assistant Sports Development and Training Officer. That one's been filled. And we'll start on the 1st of December, that's one. And then there are another two that added to the three that we asked last month, and the closing date. In two internal vacancies, namely the centre manager one, which is and the assistant administration manager grade 4. We have now, as I said, elapsed. That means that the time for applying. Now that has elapsed, and now they are in the interview process, which is going to happen within the next week or two, I assume.
I was saying, Mr. Speaker, that these two permanent vacancies, the application deadline date has elapsed. Therefore, that is now working progress on the internal vacancy. Then, behind the Minister correctly saying that two other posts have been filled in until the 1st of December, I still end up concluding one. I have heard two for taking post on the 1st of December. Am I wrong?
For the Honourable Member, I said the vacancy for the Assistant Sports Development and Training Officer is one place. Maybe you're confusing it because you're thinking it is one Sports Development Officer and then one Training Officer. One place.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That word and led me to conclude that that's what it is. I now think there's great information and I look forward in due course to finalize when the two internal vacancies have been filled.
Question number 733, the Honourable E.J. Zelly.
Can the Minister for Sport provide updated details of all payments made during this financial year in respect of any sports grants and sports related grants? Since the answer provided to question number 618 of 2016.
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, I now hand over the Honourable Member opposite an updated schedule in respect of all payments made during this current financial year in respect of sports grants related. I take this opportunity to remind the Honourable Member that updated information is posted on the GSLA website, gsla.gi. These changes are effective on a monthly basis and or when required. And if I just give them a little explanation as to what as or when required means, that sometimes the Honourable Member might see in the post that, for example, it is updated in September, and it's now November, and the update date is September. Thinking of the Honourable Member, the Honourable Member might think that it's not been updated for 2 months. It means that there hasn't been any change, and therefore they do not put a date of when it's revised or looked at.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, that really doesn't that help, because I told the Secretary that I haven't been updated for some time, and I thought that the staff have not had the opportunity to physically update it. So I now understand that conflict, and that will guide me for future questions.
Question number 734, the Honourable E.J. Hillis.
Mr. Speaker, all further cultural grants, sorry.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to request that he knows before I speak what it is and what you say about that. I'm sure the people will appreciate that sentiment that we have of getting actually mind read each other. Mr. Speaker, question 734, if I'm correct. Can the Minister for Culture provide updated details of any cultural grants awarded since the answer to question number 619 of 2016?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
And here goes the answer.
No further cultural grant has been awarded since my answer to question 619-516. I take this opportunity to remind the Honourable Member that updated information is posted on the statistics section of the HMDOG website, thebroadset.gov.gr, on a regular basis. Again, Mr. Speaker, I emphasize because it was what I, and this is the actual example of you are. This last month, there has been no update, no further payment. Therefore, the update is shown there probably October or September, and therefore it's not that it's not been updated. It means that there hasn't been any payment, and therefore there is no need to upgrade the website. It could be probably one way of doing it is saying a revised date. It could probably tell you the IT department is to say revised date, and that means that the Honourable Member will know that when he goes to put the example now in November, he knows it's been revised, and therefore that's the latest that he would get.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, that's probably what I was thinking of, because it could have happened after 2 months there has been no grants passed to Treasury, and so that is going to be a case, but I will be none the wiser. Well, I think that because no activity has happened, but I think the Minister is starting to head in the right direction. We should ask the IT department to say, updated as that. And that, because we're not interested in the actual date when the payment was made, you know, just the concept of how much has been given to a particular set of activities. So even if there's no movement, if you just put updated that, then I know there's no need. Or I could pose a question arising out of information there, but it would save Mr. Speaker some time in having read the same my previous request information.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I can assure you, the Honourable Member, that it would avoid me. I have to answer the question as well, anyway. So, and I can also guarantee the Honourable Member that I keep on time of this so that I don't get the question to them.
Question number 735, the Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassan.
Is there a planned maintenance program for our play parks in the Volta?
on to the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, the VSLA conducts daily tests and updates what repairs on a daily basis on all parts on programs and other arenas.
Mr. Speaker, on issues of hygiene and health and safety, this is what made me ask this question. I frequent the park quite often as I have young children, and I find that the standard of hygiene and the rubbish that's about, or issues of health and safety in terms of the odd metal bars sticking out every now and then in different places that I am, can be quite a danger for children. So I ask the Minister to please either enlighten us as to whether he is satisfied with the level of supervision that there is with the DSLA, as you've mentioned, or if he would be willing to step it up or not, because I can assure him that the things I've witnessed are not good enough for our young children.
Mr. Speaker, I encourage the Honourable Lady that whenever she sees anything in a house that she's not happy or feels very done safe, there is a hotline in which she can ring up, and I can assure the Honourable Lady that within at the maximum 24 hours, there will be a team there to tackle either to make safe provisionally or to completely fix whatever is damaged or whatever. So, under hygiene, you say, if the Honourable Lady who says that she thinks the park is not happy with any of the services, there is a hotline because there's a team which is there specifically to look after the park. And I guarantee the Honourable Lady that when they do ring, when anybody rings the hotline, it is tackled immediately because we do take seriously the health and safety of the park.
Mr. Speaker, I don't doubt that the Minister and any other civilian would take seriously such a crucial part of our leisure life. But if there is a hotline, I didn't know about it, and I have frequent the park. Can I ask the Minister to consider, as a matter of priority, to put signs in different parks with the hotline so that parents can call up when they do see something? I think that would be a constructive approach.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, there are in all the parks. Maybe I'll have a look at it. I mean, maybe they're not as visible as they should be. But I can honestly say that instructions are given, and I'm conscious of certain parks, maybe not in a visual case, but they are there. And I can honestly say I was the one that instigated of having a hotline there, so that they have a mobile, you ring up, and the essentials are seen as it physically possible. But I'll take on what the Honourable Lady says, and I'll have a look again, because maybe it's either been missed or not visible enough. Okay?
Question number 736, the Honourable Lady MD Hassan Minister.
Are there plans for the theatre complex and other bodies which were planned to be housed in Queen Cinema and Queen Hotel buildings going ahead?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, the answer remains the same as set out by the Chief Minister in answer to supplementary questions to question 6.1 of 2016 last month.
Mr. Speaker, at the expense of not having done my homework, I have to say that the main reason for my question was actually the concern that I live very close by and I can see it all the time, and I've noticed that there have been break-ins, there has been vandalism, and it's something that concerns me very much. Of course, the manifesto commitment of completing the project goes without saying, but I was actually coming more from a point of safety, and if I'm not established to find this answer as quickly, but if the answer to that is yes and that there is something in the pipeline, can we in the interim ensure that there is some kind of fencing or security to to stop any further breaking the vandalism.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the Honourable Lady is talking about the cinema, as opposed to the hotel. It is the hotel where people are living now, and to be safe anyway. I have had a few calls to me about the safety of that. We do have GPS to constantly go there and make sure that windows are closed, or that if the window is broken, that there's a board put up. So as far as is possible, because if they call, we do that. So again, I ask the Honourable Lady, whoever is worried about that place called GPS, and to again react and do something about the safety, because I understand. I've had a few phone calls myself about saying, the window of the Queen's Cinema is wide open and they see people going in and a youngster going in. I can see the Honourable Lady again, if we get notice of what is happening, we will react to as soon as possible. We now move to questions to the Honourable the Minister for Tourism, Employment, Commercial Aviation and the Port. We commence with question number 786, and I believe it's the Honourable Mr. Trevor Hamilton's asking on behalf of the Honourable Alice Lennon. Mr. Speaker, can the government provide details of how many taxpayers are currently claiming the disability tax allowance?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Employment, Commercial Aviation and the Port.
Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 787 of 2016.
Question number 787.
Can the government provide details of the effective beneficial value taxpayers claiming the disability tax allowance have actually benefited from in each tax year since 2011-12?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Employment, Commercial Aviation and the Port.
Speaker, under the income tax allowance deduction and exemption for the year 1992, there is no disability tax allowance. The 7A of the income tax allowance deduction and exemption for the year 1992 provides an allowance for parents of disabled individuals. In this respect, there are currently 69 taxpayers claiming this allowance. The total beneficial value in respect of this allowance for each tax year since 2011-12 is as follows. 2011-12, £27,771. 2012-13, £23,358. 2013-14, £44,650. 2014-15, £34,460. 2015-16, £11,350, 2016-17,
nil. Question number 788, the Honourable T.M. Hammond on behalf of the Honourable Ella Fiennes.
Mr. Speaker, just looking at those figures of 37,000 odd for 2012-23, 2013-34, 2014-34, 2015, then there's a sharp decline by two-thirds to 11,000 at the financial year end of 2016. Does the Commons Minister afford an explanation in relation to why there is that sharp decline for that year, please?
The reason is quite simply the assessments are still pending. For 2016-17, the assessments are not made, even though the claim is made by taxpayers. The assessment, the actual tax assessment for the individual, is not made until after the end of the year and after the employers provide what is called a P8 form in respect of all the employees. Subsequently, the assessments are made, and that is why the beneficial value this year is nil, because those assessments have not been made, even though there are currently 69 taxpayers claiming that allowance. Well, 11 carries last year, so there are a number of assessments which are still pending. That is why you see more this year, 11,000, and then there is a jump. Because the further back we go, the more assessments will have been made for that particular tax year. For this year, no tax assessments have been made because the year hasn't ended.
Question number 788, the Honourable T.M. Hammond on behalf of the Honourable Ellis Yemen.
Mr. Speaker, can the government disclose how many workers not directly employed by the Gibraltar Tourist Board are providing services to the Gibraltar Tourist Board during each financial year since the 30th of March 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, and during this current financial year?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Employment, Commercial Aviation and the Port.
The Speaker, information requested is as follows. 2012-13-1, 2013-14-11, 2015-16-7, 2016-17-6.
Question number 789, the Honourable T.M. Hammond on behalf of the Honourable Ellis Yemen.
Can the government disclose how many subcontracted workers are providing services to the Gibraltar Tourist Board during each financial year since 30th March 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015 and 2016 to date, providing details of roles and duties assigned to each subcontracted worker, the entity of the employer the worker is employed by, and the reason for requiring their services?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Employment, Commercial Aviation and the Port.
Speaker, since July 2012, the Gibraltar Tourist Board has subcontracted one worker. The individual concerned is employed as a marketing consultant specializing in airline route development. The individual is self-employed. The person is employed to help develop air services to the water, the results of which are apparent, and to support the GTB's marketing team.
Question number 719, the Honourable C.M. Hammond on behalf of the Honourable Ellis Yemen.
Can the government provide statistics of how many tourist information and survey officers have been employed during each summer season, usually done by students, for 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, and 2016?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Employment, Commercial Aviation and the Port.
Speaker, I believe the Honourable Member, the Honourable Gentleman is referring to visitor information for all officers employed in the past 5 years of the tourist board to give information to visitors during the summer months. If that is what he's referring to, I can confirm that 12 were employed in 2012, 13 and 14. 11 were employed in 2015 and 9 in 2016.
Question number 791.
Mr. Speaker, if I was asking why it was decided not to employ any in 2016.
Speaker, this is something that was done by the students under the student scheme for the summer. That was the government does on a yearly basis. This year we have had less students than previous years, and the Gibraltar Tourist Board felt that this was a service which was not necessary and therefore we could be sent with it.
Mr. Speaker, in the past, when we say that students can perform this task, is it that students have directly applied to perform this task, or is it that the government has allocated from a pool of students a number of students in order to undertake this task?
Peter, I don't have the follow up to the answer to this. My understanding of the student scheme is that students apply to join the government, and then the government decides where those students are allocated, whether it's in the tax office. My office has had one or two this particular year. It's not as if those students apply specifically to come to my office this particular year, but they generally apply to the scheme during the summer, the summer allocation, the government allocation to the different departments.
And that is my understanding too, and therefore it must follow that it is the government that is taking the decision not to allocate any students to this particular task, and therefore there must be a reason. And could I ask the Minister for the reason?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I gave this in my original answer. If you voted to the board, felt that this was a service which is not necessary.
Question number 791, the Honourable T. M. Hammond, on behalf of the Honourable L.S. Yaman.
Can the government provide a schedule of how many cruise ship passengers disembark from each cruise ship arriving, together with the number of passengers on board each cruise ship since January 2012?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Employment, Commercial Aviation and the Port.
Speaker, the information requested by the Honourable Gentleman is contained in the schedule now being handed to him. And whilst the schedule is being taken over, can I qualify to explain some of the information that the Honourable Member will be getting? The schedule contains, for each month since January 2012, the cruise ships have had arrived in Gibraltar. It then contains three columns: number of passengers on board, number of crew on board, and passengers and crew ashore. And although the question relates to the number of cruise ship passengers disembarked, this is not actually information that is provided by the cruise liners themselves. We have a total number of people that have disembarked, but amongst those people that have disembarked, we will have clearly some crew members. So we have an initial breakdown of the number of passengers and the number of crew on board, but in respect of the numbers disembarking, they are mixed together and the split is not given. And therefore, I cannot give the Honourable Member the number of passengers that have disembarked. I can give the total number of people that have disembarked. But clearly, given that passengers will always be substantially more in most cases than members of the crew, the large percentage of the number of passengers and crew on board will in fact be passengers. But I cannot give in to the last person the exact number, because that information is simply not available.
Question number 792, the Honourable D.A. Keaton.
Mr. Speaker, what is the current total workforce at the Sunbourne Hotel?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Employment, Commercial Aviation and the Port.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 793 of 2016.
Question number 793, the Honourable D.A. Keaton.
Mr. Speaker, how many Gibraltarians are currently employed at the Sunbourne Hotel?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Employment, Commercial Aviation and the Port.
Mr. Speaker, I stated an answer to question 283 of 2016. The information the Honourable Member requests is confidential by virtue of the Employment Regulations 1994.
Well, Mr. Speaker, in relation to the second question, which is the number of Gibraltarians that are currently employed at the Sunbourne Hotel, why would that be confidential? Well, in fact, the government itself in the past has commented on the number of employees that it was and the number of people that it was sending to the Sunbourne Hotel in order to be employed. And therefore, if the government talks about the number of people that are sent to the Sunbourne Hotel to be employed, ergo, what the government is saying, look, we are making an effort to send the Sunborne Hotel, Gibraltarians, to be employed by them. Is it not reasonable for me to ask, well, how many Gibraltarians are currently employed by the Sunborne Hotel?
Because it's not whether it's reasonable for the honourable members to ask or not. The issue is that Regulation 3 of the Employment Regulations 1994 relates to confidentiality and prevents, actually prevents, the government from giving this information. That is the advice that had been given to the government previously in answer to questions 280-283 of 2016. I have taken advice again, and the government simply is bound by confidentiality.
Mr. Speaker, the reason why I raise this particular question is because, certainly in my surgeries, on a very regular basis, I get people that come to see me to tell me, Gibraltarians, to tell me that that you know they've applied to for jobs at the Sunborne Hotel and that they feel that they are being discriminated against. And that there is a preference for this particular employer to employ non-Gibraltarians. And Mr. Speaker, what is the government doing to keep tabs on the situation in relation to how many Gibraltarians are being employed by an entity that obviously is in receipt of a substantial amount of money by way of a loan from credit finance, £30 to £40 million, and that therefore it ought to be giving something back and employing Gibraltarians?
Speaker, the honourable member seems to believe that because the information is not being provided to him, that it's not something that we have or that we monitor. Of course we have the numbers. Of course the government has the number, but the government is prevented through confidentiality provisions in the law. So the law prevents the government from providing that information. So we do have the Gibraltarians employed in the Sunborn. The honourable member knows the very extensive efforts that were made, particularly by my predecessor for employment, in tackling the issue of Gibraltarians unemployed, and the very successful policy that this government has pursued. Not just the policy, but the practice of the honourable member, my honourable colleague in the past, where we have record numbers of low Gibraltarian unemployed. That must count for something. That must count for the fact that the honourable member did an excellent job in his time as Minister for Employment, that he deployed his resources appropriately, that we deployed a lot of effort in getting Gibraltarians into employment, and those efforts have paid off. And therefore, there is no question, and certainly with the appeal of NAPA, that the government became aware of that Gibraltarians were being discriminated against. There is no question of that happening or being tolerated by the government in any way. The government would certainly not take a very, very serious issue. So we're satisfied that that is not the case, and we are also satisfied that the steps of the government has taken in respect of getting Gibraltarians into employment are working, have worked, and that's why we have record low numbers.
So does it follow from that answer that the government is satisfied at the number of Gibraltarians employed at the Sunborne Hotel?
I'm not sure what the honourable member has in relation to Sunborne Hotel, whether he really wants to say, whether he wants everybody to be without employment. I'm not sure what his agenda is. But whether more Gibraltarians can be employed at the Sunborne Hotel or any other employer, that is something that the government will always be striving for. Will we ever be satisfied? Will we be satisfied when we have zero unemployment of Gibraltarians? Can we ever get to that? Well, that might be something of a difficult task, but what we will certainly do is continue our efforts, not just with respect to Sunborne, but with respect to every employer, our efforts to get Gibraltarians into employment, and those efforts have paid off in the past and will continue in the future.
With respect to the honourable gentleman, I mean, the answer is certainly a masterclass at avoiding the question and evading the question. But the question was, is the government satisfied at the number of Gibraltarians employed at the Sunborne Hotel? not the number of Gibraltarians employed generally, not about the effort that the government has made generally, it's in relation to the Sunderland Hotel. Is the government satisfied with the number of Gibraltarians employed by that entity?
Does the Honourable Member think that Parliament is the right place for the government to be answerable in respect of individual employees and what they do?
No, certainly not. The government is answerable for government policy and government actions and government information that it can and does make publicly available.
That is what the government is answerable for, and that is what the rules provide. The Honourable Member can't ask me about the actions of a particular employer.
We'll be here all day if we go through employer by employer, as we could if the Honourable Member was able to ask me for a question. Because then we'd be talking about the number of Gibraltarians employed in every single employer, by every single employer in Gibraltar, whether the government was satisfied or not.
That is not the purpose of question time. That is not what the rules, in my view, allow for. And what I have given the government policy, government view, and the efforts that the government has been making in this field. And I can tell you, because the Honourable Member asked whether the government is satisfied. The government is entirely satisfied with the efforts that it is making and the efforts that it has made in getting rid of everything that's wrong.
But Mr. Speaker, does the Honourable Gentleman not recognise that there is a distinction between the average employer and this particular employer? This is a particular employer that is in receipt of a loan of between 30 and 40 million pounds of savers' money, savers and taxpayers' money, by way of credit finance. And therefore, in those circumstances, it is completely and utterly appropriate for me to come to this House and ask the government whether it is satisfied with the level of employment by Gibraltarians by the Sunderland Hotel. Is that not the case?
Speaker, again, I have to wonder what the Honourable Member has with respect to the Sunderland Hotel, because this particular employee seems to have an obsession with the Sunderland, and almost an unhealthy obsession with someone who's providing a very good service to Gibraltar actually failing, because that seems to be the agenda in the Honourable Member's mind. The government will not get into issues of individual employers and the actions of individual employers, and whether those actions are right or not. If the government has issues to raise with individual employers, the government will do so. The Parliament is not the right place for the government in any way, and the Honourable Member seems to be almost trying to make the government accountable, simply on the basis that someone has received a loan from a public entity. That doesn't make the government accountable for all the actions of that particular individual or employer, and that is not something that we want to get into.
Question number 737, the Honourable T.M. Hammond, on behalf of the Honourable LSM.
Can the government disclose the cost of maintenance of each beach or bathing facility for the financial years ending 31st March for each of the financial years since 2012 and the current financial year to date?
I to the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the information requested by the Honourable Member is in the schedule that I now hand over.
Not a very long schedule, so if the Honourable Member wishes to ask any supplementary now, he can do so. The Honourable Trevor Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, if I may ask the Minister the reason for the significant spike in the year 2013-14, where the trust seems to have risen to £1.2 million.
Mr. Speaker, I don't have direct information. Members must recall that I have assumed responsibility for this only in recent weeks. But from memory, I suspect that it is because of the marked improvements that this government made to Vitsi in what was essentially our second summer after the experience of our first summer, where we carried out considerable improvements toward Vitsi, including by way of accessibility and other improvements. I would have to confirm exactly what the costs were and what the money was spent on, but I suspect it was the year when our beaches were taken up to another level by the then Minister for Tourism, the Honourable Newcastle.
I'm grateful to the Minister for his answer. In rereading the question, I believe the questions are more specific in that we ask the question mentioned for each beach, although it says we have a total cost in all beaches. I wonder if the Minister would be able to provide a breakdown in due course.
Mr. Speaker, the information is divided into beaches collectively and the Bowling Pavilion. I have not been provided with a breakdown, whether that is because I seem to recall that I was told that for some items they are bought collectively for all the beaches, and it's not easy to break them down into particular beaches. However, I will once again ask and confirm whether that is true, and I would be happy to. There is no reason why we don't want to divide it into beaches. It's just the way I suspect that the information is recorded. If you buy certain items which are used across the beaches, perhaps there isn't a breakdown in the book as to how many of one go to one beach or the other. But I will inquire and confirm that, Mr. Speaker.
Question number 738, the Honourable T.M. Hammond on behalf of the Honourable Ellis Gallant.
Mr. Speaker, can the government disclose the cost of the floating attractions once enjoyed on our beaches and confirm they have all been subjected to vandalism and are beyond economical repair?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the cost was answered in question 590 of 2016. Of the six attractions purchased, one is usable. The decision to discontinue their use was made due to the high cost of maintaining these, principally because they suffered from vandalism. The five that are unusable are beyond economic repair.
Question number 739, the Honourable T.M. Hammond on behalf of the Honourable Ellis Gallant.
Can the government disclose the cost of providing jellyfish net as at the end of each financial year since they were first installed today?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the information requested by the Honourable Member is in the schedule that I now hand over.
Thank you.
just my own understanding of the answer. Is it fair to say that the higher cost in year 13 and 14 was due to the purchase of the nets, and then presumably the year subsequent to that, the cost had been more to do with maintenance of the nets?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Essentially, there had to be purchased. We needed to get an expert over to advise on the deployment and so on and so forth. Whereas in subsequent years, it's been replacing particular bits, repairing particular bits, and more of a maintenance than the upfront purchase of the equipment.
Question number 740, the Honourable T.M. Hammond, on behalf of the Honourable Alex Yamas.
Can the government explain what measures are being taken to recover the arrears due to the Gibraltar Tourist Board in respect of tourist sites?
I'm to the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, I would answer this question together with question 741.
Question number 741.
Can the government disclose details of how many companies, businesses, or individuals owe arrears to the Gibraltar Tourist Board in respect of tourist sites, together with the amount they each pay and amount owed by each debtor per financial year?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, yes, the GCB constantly monitors the amount of arrears owed by these companies and pursues payments which are effected regularly to recover the money owed. All operators buying tickets for the tourist sites enjoy a 90-day credit period. The specific information requested is in the schedule which I have just handed over. Let me just say, Mr. Speaker, there is a footnote in the schedule which means that there's been a further payment which makes one of the payments stand, or one of the fund outstanding stand at 93,370.10. I am informed that as of yesterday there had been a further payment of 30,000 made against that, so that will now read 63,000 and so on, and not 93,000 and so on.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Minister for his answer. I mentioned the Central Auditor's Auditor's Report for 2015, paragraph 2.12.30, page 29, and refers to the tourist site receipts arrears at 31st March 2016 increasing by 119,194 to 303,110. And then goes on to say the sum of 92,437 and 2,752 owed by two companies were over the credit period established by the Water Sports Board. The former sums due during the financial period 15-16, the latter arrears debt arose from the 31st of May 2014. I wonder if the Minister could clarify why there would be a 65% increase in the arrears in 1 year, and how it is that tour operators are allowed to see their credit period.
Mr. Speaker, the answer provided has, I think, answered the question. The detail to which the Honourable Member has gone in supplementary would, I think, require notice. And I would be very happy to look into the details and to tally one thing with the other, but I cannot answer that without notice, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member cannot expect that a question of this nature, where specific information is being requested, and specific financial and information is provided, that he can then make a reference to the principal auditor's report and expect an answer on the spot. That is quite impossible, but there is no case to be given of that question.
You can see the appreciate the clarification, but I guess what I was trying to do is get back to question 140, which is what measures have been taken to recover arrears, and part of the measure to recover arrears is seriously to monitor credit limits in excess.
commission speaker. And I'm sure again I have only taken responsibility for this part of the former tourism ministry over the last few weeks. But I am certain that that has been done, and the fact that since the answer was prepared, there have been two payments of approximately £30,000 each, means that this has been recovered.
Question number 742, the Honourable T.M. Hammond, on behalf of the Honourable Ellis Yemmers.
Mr. Speaker, in connection with 3.7.13 and 3.7.14 of the Principal Auditor's Report 2014-15, can the Government disclose the itemised details of the capital work the Principal Auditor is referring to, together with the three quotes received for each work, and disclose the final successful contractor of the successful quote?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
The Speaker, information is commercially sensitive and cannot be made public, but I would be happy to provide the Honourable Member to provide it to the Honourable Member on a confidential basis.
Question number 743, the Honourable T.M. Hammond, on behalf of the Honourable Ellis Yemmers.
Can the Government update this House as to when the expected opening date for Mount Misery Glass Locality?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with questions 744 to 747.
Question number 744.
Can the Government disclose the expected final cost of the Mount Misery Glass Lookout?
Question number 745.
Has the refurbishment programme for Royal Anglian Way been completed? If not, when will they be completed? What works are pending? And what is the expected additional cost?
Question number 746.
Does the Government intend to provide any safety measures at the Royal Anglian Way steps leading to the Windsor Bridge when walking south to north?
Question number 747.
Can the Government disclose the cost of the Royal Anglian Way refurbishment to date?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, in answer to question 743, we expect to open it before next spring. To 744, £1,186,772. The original plan program in respect of 745 for Anglian Way has been completed, although further improvements are being considered. In answer to question 746, no, sir. And in answer to question 747,
£684,102. Mr. Speaker, if I may, in relation to question 746, having walked down that path myself, it is so steep. I would imagine at least half the government is considering putting some type of handrail next to those steps. And also, as a supplementary, what is the provision for access for disabled people? There seems to be no way for access going north to south.
Mr. Speaker, the Upper Rock is a natural area, and is an area which, if we were to look at every single path, at every single lookout, at every single cliff that the Volta has, not just in the Upper Rock, but elsewhere, would we put handrails and fences throughout all the extent of all these areas? It's a difficult decision, and I think that the successive governments have decided that it's a natural space. People know they're going into a natural space where there are just steep paths and steps have been hewn out of the rocks and cliffs, and they're going to be able to identify the cliffs. And we'll take the necessary precautions. If we were to start fencing off everything that could potentially be dangerous, we would end up with extremely expensive exercise, but also an upper off which looks like anything but a natural area. So these are, I think, considerations. In regard to accessibility from the south, once again, it would be well nigh impossible because of the lie of the land and the contour to provide accessibility to the bridge from the south. There is a relatively smooth path to and from the north, and therefore I think that that is the access that would have to be used in those circumstances.
I thank the Minister for his answer. We begin to accept that this is not a general area around the upper rocks, as we're all familiar with. This is a very new, not specifically designed, but new inclusive section where you do want people to walk around that area in probably a higher footfall than it would have done normally. And it is obvious to anybody who's been up there that that the government has made improvements in terms of safety. In the area, in terms of putting up railings and safety features. I would not be a logical extension of that work to finish that work by putting in, you know, safety features at the southern end of that park.
Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Member has rightly said, there's been a massive improvement in Angling Way and in the safety elements. The handrails have been replaced and there is safe access. From the road, particularly to the north, to the bridge and back again. So, anybody with a difficulty in tackling some of the accesses, and there are at least two of it, would, to my mind, choose the safe access and not the one that they didn't feel they could negotiate. I think we want a similar footfall for the whole of the Upper Rock and not necessarily more to this area. I am satisfied that you can get to and from the bridge safely from one particular direction. I think next time I go there, I look at it in with all eyes. But I think that providing fencing and so on. A lot of the other areas there would beg the question, why not at the top of the rock, why not at Princess Caroline, why not at Mediterranean Step, which is relatively safe, but not everybody can negotiate Mediterranean Step, and this is a fact. I will have a look at it again. I don't think we're failing, it is now much safer, it is safe even for people with accessibility concerns. To get there from one direction, but it's certainly something that, as we continue to improve the Upper Rock, as we have been doing as never before, we will obviously bear in mind.
Question number 748, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, when will the consultation period be over and the final version of the draft of the Gibraltar Nature Reserve Management Plan be published?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 749 to 753 and 769, which I believe is the Honourable Lady.
Question number 749.
How often does the Minister expect that the Nature Reserve Management Board, as described in the draft Nature Reserve Management Plan, at Wilmington?
Question number 750.
What does government have in mind when it says in its draft Gibraltar Nature Reserve Management Plan that it will be increasing resources to the Gibraltar Nature Reserve Management Team?
Question number 751.
Will the Minister consider adding dog fouling to the list of issues affecting the Europa Forestier Nature Reserve in the draft Gibraltar Nature Reserve Management Plan?
Question number 752.
Does the Minister know how long it will take to implement all measures recommended in the draft Gibraltar Nature Reserve Management Plan?
Question number 753.
Does the minister know what will be the total cost of implementing all measures recommended in the draft of the Volcan Nature Reserve Management Plan?
Question number 769. The Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassan-Lyon.
Is government looking to expand tourist facilities in the Upper Rocks during this electoral time?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the consultation period for the Devolta Nature Reserve Management Plan will finalise in December. The final version is expected to be published within the first quarter of 2017. At this time, the details referred to in these questions cannot finally be determined. The tourist product has already been expanded by the opening of the new Windsor Suspension Bridge. We expect to further expand the tourist facilities in the Upper Rock by the opening of the Mount Misery Glass Lookout.
Mr. Speaker, while I understand it is still a draft plan and in consultation, is the minister expecting the plan to be changed so radically that we can provide no information regarding questions 749, 750, 751, 752, and 753, one of which is actually to ask him to consider adding to the plan the question of dog fouling as an issue at the Europa Fortress.
Speaker, a full consultation must be open to all kinds of change, including radical change. A lot of comments have come in. And the department is discussing how it's going to adapt the plan, depending on the comments. And I think we must also bear in mind that because the government has now rearranged the responsibility for the Upper Rock site, and that passes under my ministry, as does the Ministry for Heritage, it now has a number of additional dimensions, which perhaps we would now tackle in a different way within one department. And therefore, the whole question of resources, for example, and how we can combine those resources to be more effective and more efficient comes into play. And therefore, there may be some considerable changes, and I don't think I can hold myself to what is a consultation document where additional comments might still come in. Similarly, for the question on the overcoming photo, that might still be an issue at the time of the final plan. It might not, so we will see whether that is incorporated or not at the correct time. So I think it would be premature to commit to any of those answers, because otherwise it would make a mockery of the word consultation.
Regarding the fourth floor, I am asking the minister whether he would consider or not. Is the minister saying that he wouldn't consider, or is he acknowledging that he is considering the possibility of including that in the final plan?
Mr. Speaker, I think I have said that any representations will be considered. I think that is clear. Whether we include a lobby in the section of the management plan in the fourth floor, that there is dog fouling there, it may or may not go in. Hopefully, by that time, we will have solved that problem, and it won't be a major consideration, but dog fouling is a potential everywhere. I think we're making a little bit too much, but if it can solve a problem and save us time, clearly, by defining this conversation, I will consider it.
Mr. Speaker, my question was relating to basics like bathroom facilities and cafeteria, because I've had many tourists complaining that there's only these facilities in one part. So, considering that the minister is assuring us about this consultation, I would hope and expect that these requests that I'm putting through will be basic things that will probably be incorporated.
Mr. Speaker, I'm happy to respond to that. I did think that perhaps the Honourable Lady was referring to major new sites, which I think is my answer. There are a few things that are going to be happening, like new lighting outside the Great Sea Tunnel
information panels out inside the Michael Cave and a new PA system within the cave. And clearly, now that this is quite under my responsibility, I'm looking at all the staff, perhaps refreshing them. I'm certainly suggesting, such as I have heard today, I would be very, very happy to consider and build into the plan so that we can have an improved product in the upper rock. And if the lady wants to contact me with any further ideas, I would be very happy to have the team with today.
Mr. Speaker, following on the lady's question, I wonder if the minister would be amenable to answering a proper general question about how to start to expand in the upper rock in terms of the decision-making process. I mean, I appreciate you need to the ministry, but is there such a thing as an advisory board or working group in terms of expansion of social services in the upper rock? I'm just curious as to how what the decision process is, who decides where to place the bridge, why Mount Moseley versus the civil station. How are these decisions arrived at?
The water makers of management plan does include the setting up of a board which will consider these things. Quite what level is still to be determined, as I said before, because it is a consultation document. And at present, different departments, until very recently, different departments, the police force and the Department of Environment, particularly, would have separate input as to what happens in the upper rock. Now that is all going to come under the Department of the expanded Department of the Environment, which will include the suicide and heritage, and therefore it would be the team that administers that department that would come up with recommendations and make recommendations, I suppose, ultimately to me, which is if they have wider implications, I would refer to cabinet. But in the first instance, it would be the team working within those departments that would come up with these ideas and discussions.
And Mr. Peter, your indulgence in able to allow this question. But does this project have to present a proposal with tax implications and the revenue implications for a particular project, whether it will be self-financing or anything like that, or is it just a really great idea? What do you think?
If you allow the question, then you allow me to answer. I'm all for great ideas, but clearly every project has to have a design, costing, absolutely. As an example, the bridge, there was a proposal with sketches, and we looked into it, and there was a further design. We thought, yes, there is a process. It's not something that suddenly sort of dawns on one and one gives an instruction, which is done in a report of a man.
Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to hear that these projects are indeed possible. Where it comes to the recommendations that will ultimately made in the Nature Reserve Management Plan and the finally published one, will all of those recommendations have been costed?
Some recommendations will not really have a tangible cost. What's the cost of a board meeting once, or I'm going to say every 3 months? Others will have long-term costs. Others will be strategies, for example, removal of invasive species, which will take a number of years. But certainly all the ones which can be costed, particularly which would have short-term costs, would be costed.
So even strategies can also be costed, presumably man-made, to remove invasive species into your target for and that has a cost. So the question is, will it all be costed? Everything that can have a cost to be considered? Or will there just be aspirations and whether money can be found for those aspirations at a future date?
There's nothing wrong with uncosted aspirations, because if we didn't have uncosted aspirations, then the world would not progress.
So let me just make that point.
There will be aspirations. Those that have to be turned into operational matters, particularly the short term, will be costed. But I'm not going to now say that unless something is costed, it will not go in a plan, as a strategy, and as an aim. I'm not going to say that. Absolutely not.
And Mr. Speaker, in similar vein, those recommendations that are contained in the finally published plan, will they have timelines associated with them? And will it be clear that those recommendations have all been accepted by government?
I think if it's a government document, then one has to assume that they are accepted by government. I forget the first part of his question. There will be some that will have timelines and others that will not. For example, I would like to see go back to the removal of non-native species. I would like to see that, but that could take many, many years, if not decades, depending on all sorts of things. That will still be there, but there won't be a timeline and maybe not a final costing. That will be an aspiration.
Question number 754, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
After issuing an invitation to tender for the maintenance of the North Branch Cemetery, how many expressions of interest were received and why did government choose not to pursue this option?
Answer the Honourable the Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, seven companies initially expressed an interest for the tender, and four offers were subsequently received. None was considered to provide what government required.
Mr. Speaker, I presume that the terms are quite clear as to the offers. Can you explain why none of the tenders were considered to be appropriate? Was it on the basis of cost or was it on the basis of service?
Speaker, this is obviously commercial in confidence information, but if I may just say that it is not considered to be value for money, and therefore they won't just proceed with it.
Mr. Speaker, can I ask the Minister whether he is aware whether the unsuccessful tenders have been notified?
Mr. Speaker, I am not aware whether they have or not. That is done by procurement and does not have direct ministerial direction. I can only assume that there have been from the fact that the member of the day asking a question, it may be that he has information that they have not, and that would be taken up with procurement, but that is something for that office to do with.
I'm not sure you're allowed in the question or not, but is the Minister, or can the Minister explain why there was a result necessary to issue this tender?
I have no problem with that whatsoever. In order to improve the excellence in the nation, which is related to this, in order to improve the condition of the site.
Question number 755, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, when will government publish the Think and Green Digest for 2015?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, I expect the Think and Green Digest to be published by mid-December in approximately a month's time.
Question number 756, the Honourable R.M. Clinton.
Can the government advise with a recent decision as to the granting of a heritage license for the construction of the Western Parliament?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the government issued a heritage license on the 18th of October 2016 for the construction of the Liberal Parliament. However, this has not been acted upon as government is further considering options.
Question number six.
Mr. Speaker, would the minister be able to elaborate on what he means by considering further options?
No, Mr. Speaker, we're considering options. I have nothing to add. I think the Chief Minister alluded to this at the last meeting of Parliament, and I instead of saying and I'm not answering or referring to that, I've given him that answer in good faith. We are considering options, and that's why we haven't acted upon the answer, even though we could have done.
Question number 757, the Honourable D.A. Beaton.
Mr. Speaker, does the government take the view that the Nature Protection Act bans the use of all types of fishing nets in British Great Territorial Waters?
Mr. Speaker, the government takes the view that the law is clear.
Thank you very much. Can I just refer the Honourable Gentleman to Section 10, which is the ethical section, the section which he himself amended a couple of years ago. And the section now reads that there is a ban for any drilling net other than a trammel net. So is the position that trammel nets are nets that are allowable in British Border Territorial Waters, and what kind of nets are we talking about? Let me just explain. I have had a number of inquiries from people in relation to this. Because my understanding has always been that, that all types of nets have been banned in British Border Territorial Waters. But this is a drawn to my attention. And it actually does seem to me that there is a point there in that the use of the word any drill other than a travel net does appear to mean that travel nets are basically allowed.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, the Nature Protection Act bans the use of drift, fern, trammel, and gill nets. Trammel is a type of gill net. I don't have the copy of the law in front of me, but the exclusion, if the Honourable Member, being a lawyer by profession and experience, reads what it says, it does not say that trammel nets are excluded from the ban. It just refers as to the possibility, as I say, I don't have it in front of me, it just refers to those in one section as opposed to in a different section. But it does not say that these nets are not banned. All drift and trammel and gill nets and there's some better players are not banned, but all others are.
Mr. Speaker, with the Honourable Gentleman at some stage, meeting behind the speaker's chair, but I can take you through the section because my understanding was exactly the same as the Honourable Gentleman's understanding. All these notes are banned and being to the territorial waters. But then, when my attention was drawn again to Section 10, I read the words, and Section 10 starts, subject to the provisions of this part, if any person uses any drift net, any gill net, other than a trammel net, he commits an offence. And logically, the logic of what people were telling me, these individuals were telling me, actually, you know, it means that a trammel net is excluded. It did seem to me to have some potency, if I can put it that way, and I'd just like to be able to show the end of the government reception, and, or perhaps you have an explanation now.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I would want to see it in front of me. I am certain that that is not what that, certainly not what it's supposed to say, but I would be very happy to have the discussion to have the speaker's chair to clarify the situation.
Question number 758, the Honourable D.A. Beattie.
Mr. Speaker, are all macaques selected for spraying being selected by a climatologist?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, I would answer this question together with question 759 and 760.
Question number 759, the Honourable D.A. Peter.
Mr. Speaker, how many macaques have been spayed in the last 4 years?
Question 760.
Mr. Speaker, have all macaques selected for spraying had oxygen in the past?
Answer, the Honourable the Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the figure of the opposition is saddened by the fact that I'm no longer Minister for Health after he took over responsibility. He's now assuming an environmental role so he can still ask me questions directly and honest. Mr. Speaker, no macaques have been saved. No macaques have been saved. Spraying will interfere with the behaviour of the animals and the social stability of the group, and therefore has never been considered as a method for managing Gibraltar's macaque population.
I can assure the Honourable Gentleman that it's not my intention to stretch him with that is the allegation that you made, but just describing my duty as a humble leader of the opposition. But Mr. Speaker, so if they haven't been saved, and perhaps I've used the wrong terminology, sterilized, and if you could just simply substitute the word sterilized for the word saved in a few questions and provide me with an answer, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Speaker, there's such a fundamental difference between the two that I should probably ask for notice, but I'm not going to do that to him. Mr. Speaker, there is a fundamental difference which is irrelevant, because spaying is, to use a medical term, is a radial hysterectomy, is the removal of the ovaries, whereas it's being done is the ligation of a fallopian tube. The clear difference is that the implication of removing ovaries of the whole hormonal balance of the animal, and therefore of the social status and of the social interaction with such that it is much more complex with much greater implications than if you cut the fallopian tube. And that is the difference. In respect to this, Mr. Speaker, the question of a primatologist, but a primatologist is a person who studies primates. From whichever discipline, whether it's a veterinarian, a zoologist, animal behaviorist, an ape keeper, or even a minister. So therefore, the selection for sterilization and not for spaying is carried out by the team that work day to day with the macaque, and therefore, by definition, they are primatologists. And I think the third question was, yes, all the macaques have had one, except for three from the past that went to incinerator, because this is a past that is beginning to grow, and although it's not causing problems yet, we're trying to preempt it, so we're trying to reduce the population there perhaps quicker than we need to in other areas.
Question number 751, the Honourable T.M. Hammond on behalf of the Honourable L.S. Yannick.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide statistics for school year and school of students attending the learning support facilities since September 2012?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with questions 762 and 763.
Question number 762.
Can the government provide statistics of how many students have been attending the learning support facilities for school year since 2012 at each individual school where the facility is provided?
Question number 763.
Can the government provide statistics of how many students have been attending the special education needs facilities per school year at each individual school where this facility is provided?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
The Speaker, information requested by the Honourable Member is set out in the schedule, which I now hand to him.
Mr. Speaker, at risk of being accused of me talking to the Honourable Member, can I return back to the question on the macaque? Because when I eventually my question to the use of the word sterilisation, he never gave me an answer to the question of how many animals have been sterilised in the last 3 years. Mr. Speaker, I do apologise, it was unintentional. 20 animals, Mr. Speaker.
These spread over evenly over the last 4 years, or is there a particular concentration? Does he have the breakdown? Mr. Speaker, these are all this year. There have been 29 this year, most of which, I think there may have been an additional 2 which have been given a contraceptive implant, but these are all this year. They get spread throughout all the groups.
But my question relates to the last 4 years. Does he have the figures for the previous 4 years, or has there been none?
There have been, again, the question for sterilization, which is the surgical interaction which we started this year. So there has been use of contraceptive implants in previous years. I don't have that information because I collected it specifically for the new procedure, and that only started this year, so there is nothing in the previous year. Mr. Speaker, I'm happy to share, if he does remind me, the information on the contraceptive implants over the last 2 years.
Just finally, if you recall the Honourable Gentleman answering some questions in the past about this, and one of the points that he made that hurt my interest, because you know that I share an interest on some of these issues in the Upper Rock, etc., is that no primates, no monkeys that had not had oxygen were selected for sterilization. I thought the word is sterile, but we know sterilization, because it could affect that individual's progress within the group. I'm not an expert, but the answer he has given me in relation to the question of how many have been sterilized that have not had young have been 3. And 3 in a particular group, and that is in relation to the incinerator. But fully, and the justification was that this is a big group, slightly out of control, we've got to keep it under control, we're making an exception. But fully, selecting just simply young females that are sterilized, that have not had babies, may not necessarily deal with the question of controlling the numbers. Why hasn't, or could have, well, it does control the numbers, but why couldn't you have selected females that have already had young? Because there are must be females there that have had young that come from the middle of the social structure, rather than females that have had no young, and therefore is objectionable for the on the ground that the Honourable Gentleman has outlined in this House in the past.
Yeah, these issues are not easy. I need confirmation as to whether in that group there have also been females with young that have been sterilized. So I don't have that information here. I don't have the full data. There's a couple of things here. One is that this group, as I say, is not yet giving problems because it's staying within that area. But for a number of reasons, if the group splits and starts to move into other areas and the built-up areas in the Europa Point area, it would start giving us the kind of problems we want to prevent, and therefore action has got to be taken pretty quickly. And there's another problem. They are a very large group, not in the sense of aggression, but in the sense of silence. And therefore, the older females are actually very hard to catch, and it's much easier to catch the younger ones.
and then we have to take a decision. If we don't sterilize them now when we catch them and they're young, they may become impossible to catch them when they grow older, and then they will have start having babies, and then we will have to be in a position either that they're creating mischief in the surrounding built-up areas, would we have to go, God forbid, if I was saying, into consideration of putting animals down, and it is much more humane, if you look at it in that context, to actually sterilize now, and to assume the fact that they're not going to have one means that they're not going to go very high in the hierarchy, that it shouldn't, it's the lesser of the evil. That is a decision that is taken based on the knowledge of the other.
My understanding of this particular group is, not the individuals that are there, but there has been a group of monkeys in that area going back decades, if not even longer. It's one of the, my understanding is that it's one of the areas where there has been continuous, that area continuous all the way up to where the football pitch is now being planned to be built, is one of the areas where there is the continuous habitation by monkeys going back the longest. And if you satisfy that, taking into account that the sterilization of three individuals that have not had any young, for all the reasons that we've explained to the site in the past, that it's not going to upset the social structure or the group that goes back so many years.
Three around that number will cause particular problems in certain circumstances to those individuals, but because it's only a small section of the group, I don't think it's going to affect the group as a whole, other than to reduce the long-term number of young produced, which is something that we have to aim for, because we don't want this group to do what groups in the past have done in the Laguna area and so on, and therefore this is certainly a better option in our minds than large-scale culling of the group. Obviously, if we had, and we are still exploring exploitation, and we're successful, people are interested in small numbers, if we had another situation like we had in Scotland a couple of years ago, where they want a whole group, this is the group to try and cut, and it's difficult, but this is the kind of group that we would take as a whole group and remove the problem from the area. In the meantime, I think that sterilizing a few of the young females is probably a wise move and would not have huge implications as we mentioned.
Arrived from the schedule to 7-6-6. Question 7-6-4. Question number 754, the Honourable T.N. Hammond on behalf of the Honourable A.F. Hammond.
Can the government provide statistics of how many students have been attending St. Martin's School, including early birds nursery, per school year since 2012, broken down by ages, and at the end of each school year?
Answer the Honourable the Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the information requested by the Honourable Member is set out in the schedule, which I now hand over.
We can leave with 765 and come back to 7-6-4 if necessary. Question number 755, the Honourable Ian Hammond on behalf of the Honourable Ellis Hammond.
Can the government explain what is the policy and procedure to assist students leaving the education system who have been attending the special education needs facilities so far?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
The senior leadership teams in both schools work with the students and parents to either secure a place at the college to continue their education or to find work through the Employment and Training Board. The procedure normally starts at the beginning of year 10 in preparation for them leaving at the end of year 11, but can be later some of the students do stay on into year 12 and year 13. The schools engage with the parents and the students through a series of meetings.
Supplementary? Yeah. Question number 766, the Honourable D.A. Peterson.
Mr. Speaker, can the government please reveal the identity of those individuals who are members of the Working Committee on Co-Education, together with the date when they joined the committee?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the answer to this question is question 767.
Question number 767, the Honourable Mr. M.D. Hassan Naum.
Having regard to the Minister for Education's announcement regarding the appointment of a working group on co-education, can the new Bayside school that has been promised be completed within this electoral term?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the DSP Liberals manifesto for the 2015 election posed the question whether co-education was a good or a bad idea for the comprehensive school. Is it going to say that this must be reviewed dispassionately and on a non-partisan basis by experts? The idea of putting together a group of experts to review co-education was therefore raised in the manifesto itself. Co-education for the comprehensive schools was discussed between the Minister for Education at the time, the Honourable David Liguri, and a senior official at the Department of Education on several occasions, both before and after the 2015 election. In late August 2016, the then Minister for Education, my honourable friend, was sent the interim report of 2006, which was referred to during the recent debate in Parliament on the motion on co-education. The Minister gave instructions in early September 2016 for a working group to be set up. The composition of the group is as follows: Darren Greck, Acting Director of Education; Dibna Holmes, Senior Executive Officer of the Department of Education; Stuart Borastero, President of the Gibraltar Teachers Association; Michelle Baradis, Head Teacher of Westside School; Michael Tavares, Head Teacher of Bayside School; Kenneth Stiles, Head Teacher of St. Bernard's Middle School; Stephen Reyes, Parent; and Angelique Linares, Parent. The government is confident that it will be able to deliver on its commitment in respect of the new Bayside School.
Thank you for that information. But Mr. Speaker, my question was mainly aimed at the logistics of how exactly can the government commit to an extensive project of a school for boys, a manifesto commitment that will be completed supposedly within the next 3 years, while a debate on co-education is going on in terms of the logistics of a school and the elements of a school that will be bespoke, I imagine, for boys, while they haven't decided yet whether co-education will be taken over.
Mr. Speaker, I'm confident that this can happen. I think it's interesting to note that the manifesto of the DC at the time, the Honourable Member was a member of the last election, had plans to build a new, huge co-educational school where there had been no consultation. And I have no worries at all on this. Clearly, the Co-Education Committee is going to be providing its recommendations very soon, in the next few months. And the planning for the new school, which has already started, will run parallel to this. And if there is a change in the report in co-education, will be factored in at such a time. I think that the project can very, very easily absorb whatever the policy is determined in the end.
Thank you. And Mr. Speaker, can I just remind the Honourable Gentleman that it wasn't inconsistent for the GSP to, in its manifesto, suggest a co-education school. For example, what I'm arguing is that how are we sure that we can build a new Bayside while the co-education argument is going on? But the GSP in its manifesto was very clear about this new school was going to be mixed, so the logistics would have taken that into account. But I take into account what the Honourable Gentleman says, and I just would like to ask him, when do you believe that this consultation process will be completed? When will we know more about what decision has been taken with regards to whether we're going to see a new high school of co-education or not being built within this electoral term?
Mr. Speaker, as I recall in the debate here just a couple of weeks ago, I think my honourable friend mentioned that the working group would report back in March, and then there would be a wider consultation. So we will need to take a decision within this academic year, and that will be plenty of time to make any adaptations to any of the learnings. Could significant adaptations be required?
So the Minister is saying that he is confident that in a 2-year window we will have a brand new high school built as per the recommendations of this committee.
Mr. Speaker, starting now is a 3-year window. The planning process, the planning process is part of the process, and very often is the one that is more painstaking than the actual construction. So I am confident that we will be able to deliver in the next 3 years.
Mr. Speaker. With the exception of Mr. Hurgers and Ms. Linares, both the Irish Standard Accountants, everybody else is in the educational field. How were these individuals chosen on the parent side, and why was there not an advert or an attempt to cast the net wider in terms of participation by parents, for example, parents' association, or indeed the Gibraltar Women's Association, things of that sort?
The speaker seems that we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. So we set up a working group, we set the whole process in place, we start working on the issue of whether there should be co-education or not, and then the honourable member starts complaining about the methodology of how we come about doing the working group. This was not a ministerial decision. The manifesto itself made it clear that this had to be reviewed separately by experts. It was put in the hands of experts at the Department of Education. They made a recommendation, and I accepted all the names in their list of recommendations. It wasn't as if I went round deciding who is going to be part of this and who should be a parent. They were recommendations made by the experts who are knowledgeable in this field. They say that these two parents were the right persons to approach and to recommend to the minister that they should be included in the working group. I had no reason to doubt that judgment, that view that was taken by the professionals, and therefore I approved the list of the citizens. It was a simple thing.
If I may add, Mr. Speaker, and I'm grateful to my honourable friend for assisting in the reply. I totally agree. And having seen the professional manner in which the Department of Education conducts its affairs, they would have been very thorough in making a good case of working with. Let me just say that this does not mean that nobody else is going to be consulted. And this is a group that will be able to discuss and can consult, and I already myself have meetings planned with the Women's Association and with representatives of the students to discuss this as other matters. It doesn't mean that nobody else will have a say. There will be broad consultation and there will be broad involvement. So I don't think anybody needs fear that is not going to happen.
Mr. Speaker, I neither use the word fear nor attempt to instill any fear. Still less, Mr. Speaker, does the Honourable Gentleman, Minister Licourie,
have to get any high horse about a question, but just simply seek to inquire about government policy. It just strikes me that if the government has set up a working group that it says is composed of experts, and the only two non-experts are Mr. Reyes and Ms. Linares, and there has been no attempt to advertise more widely in order to seek participation in what is a recommending body, and indeed very important body as far as this particular issue is concerned, I'm asking, well, why hasn't the government cast the net wider? But can I ask this? Does the government intend to, because it's not limited to these people, does the government intend to, and can I suggest to the government that it does cast the net wider and perhaps include some of the parental organizations within this group so that the recommendations that are made by the working group are the best possible recommendations in the circumstances? Because we certainly, my view, that the wider the representation of that working group by reference to interested stakeholders, and clearly are, these are just two individuals that have no experience as far as I'm aware, of anything education related. But the wider you cast the net by reference to representational groups, the better the recommendations are going to be, and that's the only point that I'm making.
And Peter, first of all, let me say that the two parents in question may have their own views as to whether the fact that they are heralds of children in school may not make them have experience in education related matters. I don't know whether Ron Leader Liberation would have liked the Department of Education to have held interviews for the post of member of the working group. I think we're going over the top. I think we have a soundly formed working group which will reach out to all the parties who are interested. And here and now, invite anybody who wants to make an interview on the subject to write in and to submit their views. And if need be, they will be called for discussion. I don't think there's any need to amend the composition of the working group now, but what we will ensure is that everybody who wants to have a say has a say.
And will the government include any student organizations within this particular working group?
Mr. Speaker, I said earlier that I already have in my diary a meeting with representatives of the students.
That is a different answer to the question that I have asked. The Honourable Minister may have within his diary a meeting with student organizations. The question is he going to include within the working group, which at the end of the day is the body that makes the recommendations to the government, any student or student organization?
Mr. Speaker, this matter was debated at length in a full debate just 2 weeks ago or last week. And therefore, I would refer the Honourable Member to hand that there. Most of these points have already been discussed. And if there is anything after the Honourable Member has read Hansard that he is not clear about, then I would be very happy to answer his letters or to have further questions in Parliament. But I think we're just going over and over ground that we have already covered. And I, in fact, made a specific point at the time. I remember reminding the House that I was myself the chairman of the then devoted Union of Students, and clearly I will ensure that students are involved in the discussion process.
Turning back to the original question about the members of the working group, can the Minister advise, given that the review is in fact quite short deadline, the report in March 2017, can you advise the debate for the method of appointment of the members of the committee?
Presume the members are notified in writing of their appointment to the working group.
I don't know whether there was a letter of appointment. What I know is that I gave an instruction, and the Honourable Member, Colleague Ethical First, has given the timeline of what has happened and how it happened. I gave an instruction, I was given a recommendation, I saw a list, and I approved that list. And those people may have been called, may have been told, I just don't have the information as to how they were informed, whether there was a letter of appointments.
I don't have that information. What I do know is that on virtually day two or three of my having taken over the new responsibility, I was told about this group and its composition. This really mustn't become a debate when we've just had one. The government was accused during the debate of secrecy and lack of transparency by not even wanting to present the name of the group, which I didn't have in time. Today we have done it, and now both are being picked into the composition. I really don't know where we're going to.
Mr. Speaker, if I may come back to the former Minister of Education, who said the list was approved by him, I don't think he means the member was contested. Can you advise the House when he received that list?
I just don't know. I know that the instructions were given in early September to set up the working group, and at some point a list was given to me and I approved it. I certainly don't remember the list today.
Question number 768, the Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassan-Naun.
Is the Minister for Education aware that at present any member of the public can walk into any of the two comprehensive schools unchallenged?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, this is indeed a deficiency which needs to and is being addressed. If so, this is a long-standing problem that existed even before this government was elected.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful that the Minister said that he would be dealing with it. We're living in a very dangerous world, and I come from a perspective, once again, of security. I do have an interest, of course. I have two children, one in one side and one in Bayside, and I find it amazing how I can go in and out whenever I choose, yet the other two children that I have in middle school, that is not the case. I find that generally middle schools are very well secured, but the high schools, the secondary schools aren't. And not only from a point of security, but I understand that there have been moments when parents have actually gone into their schools and been rather abusive to teachers for whatever reason. So I would like to ask, will this be dealt with as a matter of priority emergency, please?
Mr. Speaker, already discussions have, even before I took over as Minister for Education, I know that discussions have been held into the way to do it. One doesn't want the school either to appear to set its doors to the community, but certainly people moving in to the school is not something that we want. And different options have been considered, including access to a reception area where parents can legitimately go and not feel that they can't go if they have any concerns, but that between there and the rest of the school where the children go, there should be some other facility. So this is being looked at, and I do take the matter very seriously, so let me reassure the Honourable Lady that this is being looked at.
Mr. I move that the House be now recessed until 3 p.m. this afternoon.
The House will now recess until 3 this afternoon.